will be up next. And actually, the news will be up next, and the detail will be on after the news. Here's the news.
On WSLR LP 96.5 FM in Sarasota and WBPV LP 100.1 FM in Bradenton, this is Rick Knowlton with your WSLR news headlines for Thursday, March 27th, 2025. To the shock of Cuban Americans and Cuban exiles worldwide, radio and television Martí has gone silent. Originally conceived as Radio Free Cuba, Ronald Reagan established the Miami-based Radio y Televisión Martí to report on Cuba outside of Fidel Castro's censorship and propaganda. But Monday last week, the Trump administration cut the station's funding, and operations were swiftly dismantled. Florida State Senator Aaron Grau, sponsor of Florida's broadly unpopular six-week abortion ban, has now proposed legislation to keep teens from obtaining contraception and even medical treatment for STIs, usually known as STDs, without parental consent. After passionate criticism by sexual abuse survivors and healthcare professionals, the bill was approved. Only one Republican, Senator Alexis Calatayud of Miami, joined Democrats in voting no. If the bill becomes law, sexually active teenagers without parental backing will be lawfully prevented from contraceptive prescriptions and treatment for sexually transmitted pathogens. Sarasota County has approved a plan to apply over $210 million in federal relief funds to cover remaining damage from the devastating storms Debbie, Helene, and Milton. They now seek public comment before implementing their plan. To review the proposal and give your thoughts, go to 2024storms.resilientsrq.net. Attention travelers to and from the Tampa area. Southbound Highway I-75 will face double lane closures tonight and again on Sunday night from 8 p.m. to 4:30 a.m. around the crossing of 44th Avenue East. That's north of State Road 70. Consider alternate routes or expect delays. This has been Rick Knowlton with your SLRQ news headlines for Thursday, March 27th, 2025.
Welcome to The Detail. I'm your host, Kathy Antunes, and you are listening to The Detail on WSLR 96.5, LPFM in Sarasota, Florida, and WBPV 100.1 LPFM in Bradenton, Florida. Programming at WSLR is supported by listeners like you and by Ringling College Galleries and Exhibitions. Ringling College's 2024-25 exhibition season features art from Ringling students, alumni, faculty, and nationally recognized artists from a wide range of mediums and from diverse backgrounds. More information is available at ringlingcollege.gallery. And the views and opinions expressed by hosts, guests, and callers on WSLR programs are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of WSLR, its staff, or volunteers. That is always true on my show. So thank you so much for joining us today, everybody. My guest is Ben Brown. Ben is a New College alumnus, and he recently this Monday stepped down as the chair of the New College Alumni Association. His resignation, he provided a detailed account in a letter, which we're going to discuss, about his concerns and still very much connected and dedicated to his alma mater, Ben Brown. Thank you so much for joining me today.
It's really a pleasure, Kathy, and I've long been a fan of the show.
Oh, thanks so much. So, Ben, why don't, before we launch into, I went to a college with a very robust, active alumni association. I went to the University of Virginia. So I appreciate that connection, you know, how it's so helpful for any university or college to stay connected to alumni. And New College has very, I would say, dedicated group of alumni. Before we get into your concerns, tell us about your experience at New College. When did you graduate? What did you study? And why did you want to stay connected?
Yeah, I'm in my late 30s now, and I was a student from 2005 to 2009. It was a really positive time in the college's history. I think most people who've gone have experiences that they treasure from being at New College, but sometimes we're more challenging than others, as I think your viewers and listeners probably know. The college has, had a dynamic history and has had trouble at times in its history. In the 1970s, it had to be taken over by, merged with the state university system because it wasn't able to keep the lights on. It had run out of, it was running out of money. But when I went, it was a very stable, positive, optimistic time in New College's history. And it was that was when Mike Michelson was serving as president. The college had gone independent from USF. It's certainly still collaborated with USF on some services and campus space, but was its own institution within the state university system. And it was a really supportive and wonderful studying environment. We had hands-on faculty who would work with the students in small groups and individually, you would really get the chance to explore what you were interested in. I did in a very traditional New College way, these tutorials, small self-design classes with just a couple of other students to study something you're really interested in. And then I had a wonderful advising as I wrote a senior thesis, which is the capstone of the New College experience. And it, of course, socially, the environment was amazing. It's as you've said, it's a lot of us have these connections we keep as we move forward in life. And and those have been quite impactful.
So what did you study when you were there?
I was a political science major, and I particularly liked political theory and philosophy.
Okay, so actually everything that's going on kind of is related to your major, right, at New College, what we're seeing in Florida and all of that. So, Ben, you obviously have a day job, so be curious about that. And then when did you take on the position as chair of the Alumni Association?
For most of my life, I've lived in the New York City metro area, and I still live there. I'm traveling right now, but that's my home. When I was at New College, I spent all 4 years, there, and actually every summer as well in Sarasota.
You didn't want to leave.
I loved. For me, coming from the New York City metro area, Sarasota was quite nice, but I became, very familiar, had an intimate familiarity with Sarasota from my college experience and the summertime experience. And I was really preoccupied with, my own life and career after I graduated for about a decade. But since then, I've gotten involved in New College again, and I've made a lot of trips to Sarasota in connection with the Alumni Association over the last few years. You asked about my day job. I'm a practicing lawyer, a very small law practice representing members of the general public, and I help families with education law matters. So it's mostly working with K through 12 students and their parents on special education matters and working out their services with the local school districts in the area where I live. So that's my day job.
Well, I'm from the New York area, Westchester County. I was born in New York City. My sister teaches special needs kids in Connecticut, and that could be a whole different show. I'm glad to know what you do there, because what's happening in government we're going to need advocates, more and more advocates for special needs children and their education. So you wrote, I've got my highlighted copy of your very, it's an 11-page letter, because this isn't a situation. You resigned this Monday from the Alumni Association, and you make it very clear you were not resigning for reasons, for personal reasons in terms of wanting more time or not having the bandwidth. You cite that your resignation is based on my, quote, my assessment of a deteriorating institutional relationship between New College of Florida, the New College Foundation, and the Alumni Association, which makes my participation no longer productive. So those three entities, you've got the Alumni Association, you've got the foundation, and you've got the college itself. Can you, you know, tell us a bit about what that deteriorating relationship, what your experience was that led you to describe it this way?
It's probably worth talking about the foundation college relationship. I think that all of the state university system institutions, New College has been proud to be counted among them. I was at FAMU yesterday in Tallahassee, and FAMU, USF, FSU, Florida Gulf Coast University, et cetera, are all state university system institutions. And since the early 2000s, I think around 2001 or 2002, New College has been a standalone state university system institution, which we've mm-hmm. been very proud of. That was during Mike Michelson's college presidency when that came into effect. And they all have what are called institutionally related foundations, which are philanthropic fundraising vehicles that support the institutions. Because all of these institutions, to some extent, are funded by, in addition to the tuition revenue mm-hmm. And fees, are funded to some extent by a combination of public investment from the state legislature and then private philanthropy. New College has historically relied disproportionately on private philanthropy.
And I want to stop there, because I think that's an important distinction. A lot of people may assume that public universities or colleges are fully funded by the government. That I don't know that that's ever the case. I know where I went to school, the alumni are very generous in giving. And you're saying that the proportion, they were disproportionately reliant on private philanthropy at New College. Still are, I would say. Is that right?
It's a little bit nuanced. Historically, very much so. And we had to make commitments in that regard when, in association with the merger with the state in the mid-1970s. So we... Historically, very much so. Currently, the overall budget, which is mostly, from the public fisc, from the state legislature, far eclipses the foundation contribution every year. So in terms of the total New College budget right now, the foundation contribution is a pretty small percentage, less than 10%.
Okay. So I want to give the audience kind of a broad overview. You describe, and then we'll get into the specifics, but you describe a situation where the new administration that came in 2023 basically took, how do I put this? You describe how the Alumni Association no longer had the kind of independence that they needed to participate productively. So I want to speak to that. You also talk about how the foundation, because let's face, Richard Corcoran's salary was big news, right? President Oker was a $300,000 salary, and this is a small college, so we'll say for the sake of argument, it was roughly 1,000 units or 1,000, I'm sorry, students, or 1,100 at the time when it was taken over. I've heard reports that now the student body is in the 700 range, although I'm not able to find documentation from the college. I think that that's been an issue. But the foundation is relied upon to, there's a rule in the state of Florida that university presidents, for their salary, they get $200,000 from the state. I learned that from your letter. Anything beyond that has to be made up in private philanthropy or foundation monies. So Patricia Oker's salary was about $300,000, and Mr. Corcoran and all of his benefits is at well over $1 million. So that's a pretty big nut to go from making up $100,000 to $1 million, you know, dollars for the foundation. And then you talk about also that the foundation is funding not just the executive salaries shortfalls, but between what the government funds and what they're actually getting, but also athletics, which New College never had. So that's kind of, and there's some legal questions, because a lot of philanthropy is directed. A lot of it is conditional. And there's transparency issues regarding alumni gifts and whether they're being given the way they were intended, or whether they're paying Mr. Corcoran or paying for the beach volleyball team. So that's kind of the broad overview. Let's talk about the lack of independence first. So you describe a situation where the Alumni Association is not able to participate the way they used to because they're no longer independent. What happened there? What do you mean by that?
Sure. And if I may, I was glad you raised the foundation contribution, because I wanted to go back to what I said before about how their contribution to the budget is small. It wasn't as small before this new administration. It wasn't as small proportionately before this new administration came in, because the budget was a lot smaller. Overall budget was a lot smaller. The college's overall budget was a lot smaller. The foundation's contribution played a greater role. Richard Corcoran has been effective, or the effort that brought him in has been effective at increasing the amount of spending on the college from the state by a lot. And that's a good thing. I mean, those resources could have been used to really help New College and deal with its deferred maintenance on facilities and get its admission operation in order, recruitment of students. It could have been a good thing. But what we found is that, and I'll go into these reasons later, I'm sure that the monies haven't been used very effectively, and we still have a lot of challenges. But, so proportionately, the foundation contribution became less because the budget grew with a lot of new state funding. And ordinarily, with that kind of excitement surrounding a college and things getting in better order and back online, you would attract more philanthropic giving, and your foundation would grow, and it wouldn't slide so much in terms of its proportionate share of the college budget that it funds. But yes, the that's been a key issue, that the state law says that only $200,000 of public money can be used toward the compensation of the president. Because they negotiated such an abrupt exit of Patricia Oker from the college, and my understanding is it was a negotiated, mutually agreed upon thing between her and the college. And they shook hands and parted ways, but they continued to be responsible for, paying a substantial amount of compensation to her after she stopped serving. And her salary was modest for a college president. She had been hired from University of Missouri for out of administrative position there. She wasn't the president there. She, you know, so this was a step up for her. And I think the idea was, you know, for a college president, relatively modest salary with opportunity for increasing it as you know, she, but, you know, also a lot of benefits to go along with it. So it's not as modest as you'd think from just the,
well, for most people, it's right. Quite a lot of money. That being yes. said, the, you know, Richard Corcoran got four times that. I mean, yes, it was like 300 grand yeah. to 1.2 roughly.
Well, I think it's not quite that huge a difference because okay. that number is with all his benefits, I believe. And she also had the benefits that college presidents received were substantial.
They're
but, I mean,
generous.
Housing allowances and yeah. so forth. But, okay. but her salary was, you know, his is some multiple of hers. His overall compensation is some multiple of hers. And as I was saying, they continue to be responsible to pay her after she left for a while. So that was a major challenge for the foundation. And the issue that I think your comments were pointing toward is the foundation is a philanthropic fundraising vehicle. So typically it raises large gifts and they have their four specific purposes that the donors care about. So the Subong Chai professorship in mathematics. So Subong Chai was an extremely talented mathematician who was working at New College for a time. And alumni remember fondly, they raised about $1 million to fund this professorship. Just an example, right? So the foundation has a lot of funds like that, like the approximately $1 million fund for the Subong Chai professorship in mathematics. And it can't be spent on other things other than, you know, funding that mathematics chair. And there's a lot of funds that are like that, that fund a particular program or professorship. So the foundation, on paper, it looks like a pretty solvent organization. It has close to $50 million in assets. But in terms of free, spendable money that can be used for any purpose on an annual basis, it's actually quite constrained. And so the salaries of the two presidents, which was, as I was saying, were being paid concurrently for a time. In effect, I think it was no longer classified as salary for Oker after she departed. But, you know,
right.
this is a lot.
Right.
And
but contractually, yeah. that $300,000 is something that still has to be paid, plus the difference between the $200,000 that covers Corcoran's salary. But beyond that, it's at least $700,000 and there are benefits in there. So we're talking about nearly $2 million or at least $1.5 million toward executive salaries that comes from the foundation. Is that fair?
Yeah, around $1 million, perhaps. Yeah,
okay.
Yes. It's, you know, outlaying every year.
Right, which is not, that burden wasn't at all the same before. It was less.
No, we were just making up the small difference between, you know, Don O'Shea and then Patricia Oker. Don O'Shea was the previous president of New College before Oker, you know, just making up the small difference between what the college could pay directly, $200,000, and the remainder their salary. So it wasn't a very big deal for
Richard
Corcoran.
So I'm going to take a quick break here to remind everybody that you are listening to WSLR, which is a unique kind of radio. Each time you tune in to WSLR, you hear our community, our people, environment, music, and attitude. When you tune in, there's a freshness you'll not hear anywhere else, thanks to the variety of voices and connections the station has with the community. The non-commercial nature of WSLR gives us independence, uncommon in media, controlled by commercial or corporate interests. Help independent media be louder than ever by making a donation during our spring membership drive, which takes place Wednesday, April 2nd through Tuesday, April 8th. Donate online at WSLR.org or call us at 941-894-6469. WSLR and Fogartyville, stronger together, louder than ever. My guest today is Ben Brown, who recently stepped down as the chair of the New College Alumni Association. We're talking about the challenges that came in the wake of President Corcoran Richard Corcoran taking over the institution. I want to read from your letter, Ben, about the issue with independence. You write that in the past, since 2002, the Alumni Association chair, which is the role you had, has served on the foundation's board of directors. So the foundation is the separate philanthropy arm, which Sidney Gruters is now the head of at New College. Through a series of corresponding changes in the college's regulations manual and foundation bylaws, New College trustees and foundation directors consolidated the New College administration's control over the New College Foundation and, arguably, over the Alumni Association itself. While these changes were under consideration, I detailed my concerns in a lengthy technical letter, which I submitted to the College Board of Trustees on November 18th, 2024. The key moment in time was December 11th, 2024, when the Foundation Board, at its meeting, ensconced these changes in the Foundation's bylaws. Over my active expression of concern and no vote, thus clearly applying the new rules to the Foundation's board. The most essential changes were that the administration gained the unilateral power to remove members of the Foundation's board without cause, and the chair of the College Board of Trustees gained the ability to make several unilateral appointments to the Foundation's board. The Alumni Association always had a member of that board. Is that right?
Yeah. What happened was we were totally independent once. And in 2002, when the foundation board was being led by General Roland Heiser, a great man. They struck a deal to affiliate with the Alumni Association with the foundation.
Okay.
And since then, we've been affiliated with them, and it was always supposed to be very much a shared governance situation. The Alumni Association turned over about $300,000 in financial assets to the foundation in 2002. So we've been affiliated since then, and ever since then, the Alumni Association chair has been serving on the foundation board as a voting member.
So are you saying, because you describe these changes, you say without meaningful independent participation in the governance of the foundation, so again, you had a seat on the foundation board, the Alumni Association did.
Yes.
And so you're saying without independence, the Alumni Association is reduced to mere window dressing, essentially a Potemkin village. Are you saying, so let me understand this, essentially the chair of the Board of Trustees could remove you if, or anybody, and add anybody to the foundation board?
It's President Corcoran who can remove anyone from the foundation board. Removing me would have been a little bit more of a challenge because though the changes that were made ostensibly give him the power to remove any member of the foundation board, the Alumni Association has a legal agreement from 2002 from the affiliation that could potentially be brought up to challenge that power. But mm-hmm. He has produced college regulations and foundation bylaws provisions that say that he has the power to remove any member of the foundation board. And it was certainly uncomfortable working in those circumstances, feeling responsible for representing the alumni and their viewpoint, and then having that hanging over my head. That was quite uncomfortable.
How did it work before these changes? Who approved who was on the board and who left, and how did that work?
The foundation would select its own new board members. So the foundation had a committee that would interview people in the community who seemed like appropriate foundation board members, and it would nominate them, and then they would be approved by the whole foundation board. And in recent years, the College Board of Trustees would have to give the thumbs up as well before they could join the foundation board. But it was effective at, you know, finding people in Sarasota Manatee community who cared about higher learning and cared about New College's mission and were interested in helping with philanthropy, and they would nominate those people for foundation board positions.
And so now, I imagine there is some collaboration, but the difference is Mr. Corcoran has the ability to remove or add at will whoever he decides. Is that fair to say?
A little more detailed than that. The chair of the College Board of Trustees now can make unilateral appointments, up to three of them. So, and these changes were all made in November and December 2024.
Okay.
It was very, very kind of pre-planned, fast-paced changes to the college regulations manual and the foundation bylaws that were very much kind of, it seemed to me, developed and orchestrated by the college administration and pushed through very rapidly, and really dramatically diminished the independence of the foundation board. So the chair of the College Board of Trustees can now make up to three unilateral appointments. The college president can remove anyone from the foundation board at any time for without giving a reason. And what we've also seen is the threat that the College Board of Trustees will use the power it has, you know, to give a thumbs up to approve the nominees for foundation board positions as sort of a line item veto. The foundation board, I think this may have actually happened, or actually it didn't actually happen, but it was sort of, it appeared to me to be kind of, may have influenced someone's decision to withdraw from, seeking a foundation board position. I'm not sure that person would agree with that description, but that's kind of how it looked to me.
So there's concern out there about this is an unusual way for a foundation to function, or at least it's a departure from how it used to function.
It's a very unusual way for a foundation to function, and there are other unusual things about how the foundation's finances and spending are set up that are also unusual. That kind of a theme of the whole thing is very unusual.
Okay.
But yes, it's normally, I mean, you want some concept of checks and balances, and you want people, you want the college president, I think in normal times, to have to persuade the foundation that the expenditures he wants them to meet are reasonable and are appropriately limited, you know, so they don't overstrain the foundation.
Well, checks and balances are there for accountability, right? To build some accountability into any system. So there's more than just a couple of set of eyes or a couple of hands on the levers of decision making. And that's been lost, right? I mean, to the extent that it was there, it's greatly diminished or weakened.
It's a very uncomfortable situation. It's not a structure that's designed to hold things together tightly for the long run. It's the job of a foundation board member has always been two parts. It's philanthropy, working on fundraising. I mean, you know, that's obviously what the foundation is all about, but the other part is stewardship, looking after all the funds that have been donated in the past and being a good steward of them, and then investment policy, because we hope to grow the endowment through investment, which is another issue.
Mm. So let's talk about first, you know, in case people don't, most people I think have some idea of how an endowment works, but just to give a synopsis, an alumni association that has an endowment for a university or a foundation that has an endowment for a college or university, they basically take gifts. A lot of those gifts are from alumni who are giving for a specific reason. You know, I give to my History Department at the University of Virginia, I think it's important that people know the history of the country. And so that's where I like to give my money when I give to my alma mater. So similarly, the New College alumni are put constraints, not all of them. Some of them give unrestricted gifts, but a lot of them give restricted gifts. But they're also, an endowment is like a pot of money that then is invested, and from that pot of money, the interest or the return on investment, a portion of it is spent. And so over time, a university can develop, or a college, a large, stable amount of money that's invested, and it provides an income stream. And then that income stream, there's very specific parameters on how much you spend, because you don't want to touch your principal, right? You want to keep that growing.
Right. Or,
yeah. So right. What you describe in this letter, I'm just going to generalize here, and I want you to get specific. You describe how these gift agreements, you didn't have the ability to verify. Is that fair?
That was a key issue, yes.
Okay. And so that when you were talking, because, you know, if you're on a board and you're looking, alumni associations, one of their major reasons for existence is financial support. And if you're on that board, you're talking to donors and you're basically asking them to continue or start with a donation. Any donor wants to be reassured that their money is actually going to the purpose that they have indicated it's going for. And yes, given the philosophical shift with the incoming administration of Mr. Corcoran, which, my opinion, was not handled with much sensitivity at all or respect to what New College had accomplished, the unique learning environment. I mean, it was a very ham-fisted takeover, as I saw it. So you've already got your alumni seeing the institution that they learned at changing significantly. Now you've got a foundation that is having to pay much more money for the president's salary, a president that's acting in ways that the alumni may not be on board with. But when you add to that an inability to verify alumni gifts, if you're having one-on-one conversations with donors and you can't confidently reassure them that the money they give is going to be going to, I don't know, political science, like your major, but that it might be grabbed to pay for Mr. Corcoran's salary or beach volleyball or baseball, that makes it difficult, I think, for someone who wants to fundraise authentically with the alumni. So can you speak to what I'm describing here? Am I capturing that accurately? And what has your experience been talking with alumni donors?
Yeah, that's you're describing it exactly accurately. And I have tried. About a year ago, I was trying very intensively to accomplish a fundraiser among alumni for a specific fund, student research and travel grants, which, you know, our students have, you know, so far done a lot of original research, and they do original. This is New College's claim to distinction in large part, that we treat undergraduate students as if they can do original research. Mm-hmm. And you know, these are competent people. They can have their own ideas. They can do mm-hmm. original. They can take their results and present them at conferences. And the Student Research and Travel Grants was a program to fund travel and supplies and things to accomplish the research, and also to fund travel to conferences to present the results. We're very proud of undergraduates who do, you know, will actually sometimes publish papers and present at conferences and things like that, and have made original contributions to fields.
And that is typically done at a master's or PhD level. That's not usually an undergraduate exercise.
It's a very special thing that we're proud of. And, you know, the senior thesis is a requirement for graduation for every new college student. So senior thesis or project, if you're doing creative arts like art or creative writing, you could do a creative project. But if you're in a field like political science, you'd be doing essentially writing an independent research paper as an undergraduate thesis. So that really instills the research ethic in the student body, the fact that they're all looking forward to completing that senior thesis before they graduate. Anyway, I've gone on a tangent, and it's one of New College's great claims to distinction that it cultivates, you know, encourages this among undergraduates. And so there's a fund at the foundation to support that. And the alumni had, you know, and we were trying to do a mass fundraiser. We also care about alumni giving rate, which is simply the percentage of alumni who make a gift of any size in a year. And so this was not about trying to court a big donor. It was about trying to do a large kind of crowdsourced fundraiser. But the questions were the same, basically, because the alumni were pretty smart people, even the ones who were only giving in small amounts. And they're good business analysts, and they could see the issue. And it's very much a structural issue that you have to believe in the oversight. And the problem on the foundation board is we were never able to either get the get all the gift agreements ourselves so that we could read them, or to get an external reviewer to read them all. So, the circumstances suggested how could the foundation be meeting all these expenses that it was tasked with, including the very large presidential compensation? Like, where was it getting the free, unrestricted annual cash flow to do that? We never could.
So, let me jump in. I'm going to read from Zach Anderson's reporting in the Herald Tribune. Now, you know, Ben, this was back in 2023. So this was February of 2023. Corcoran had just, I think he was the interim. He was not the permanent president yet. So from Zach Anderson's article in the Herald Tribune, he wrote, Larry Geiner, am I saying that right? Geiner?
Geimer.
Oh, okay. Geimer.
Yes.
The finance chair for the foundation board and a certified public accountant with Kerkering Barbario and Company said during a foundation board meeting Friday, this was late February of 2023, that 99% of foundation funds, which totaled about $43 million, are restricted, and indicated that foundation officials were not consulted before the organization's resources were committed to fund Corcoran's salary. He said it's still a very, very huge question where the money will come from to pay Corcoran, noting the foundation fundraising efforts have struggled recently. Donations appear to have dried up since Governor Ron DeSantis appointed 6 new members to New College's board on January 6, 2023, in a bid to overhaul the small liberal arts school. That was back then. They needed to come up with $500,000, and Geimer was very clear that you never asked us. You're telling us we have to come up with this money, and this is a problem. For whatever reason, the chair of the Board of Trustees, I think her name is Jenks, she kept saying, the money's there. But the finance guy is saying, where and how come you didn't ask us? Because we're 99% committed to other things. So that just indicates, again, this ham-fisted approach, as I term it, which is concerning, and not bringing in people who are actually responsible for those finances to consult with them, just simply making a decision.
Yeah, you can see the lack of consultation there. That that's seriously affected my perspective. It wasn't like they would call a conference with the foundation board and say, okay, you know, this is what our projected expenses are, and what do you think? As far as I could tell, it was a unidirectional set of demands from Richard Corcoran to Sydney Gruters telling her, you have to meet these expenses. And that's how it seemed and felt to me.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly Larry Geimer wanted to be consulted, and the other foundation board members, I'm sure, would have appreciated that kind of consultation. It did not happen.
Mm-hmm.
It was never like suggesting expenses as a question, you know, can you meet these expenses? It was, here are the expenses.
Mm-hmm.
That's how it seemed and felt to me. And that was a major problem.
Yeah.
And my experience of Larry Geimer was a very kind, conscientious person, a mm-hmm. local accountant who had been recruited to serve on the foundation board, like so many community supporters of New College had in the past, and was mm-hmm. trying to be a responsible person.
Yeah. Everybody, it's almost time for our spring membership drive at WSLR in Fogartyville. Become a member and you'll receive a WSLR bumper sticker, discounts to great events at Fogartyville, and the satisfaction of knowing you're contributing to keep this great community resource strong and thriving. You can sign up for membership at WSLR.org, call the office at 941-894-6469, or come on by the station to drop off a check and say hello. WSLR and Fogartyville, stronger together, louder than ever. My guest is Ben Brown. He resigned this past Monday from the New College Alumni Association and wrote a very thoughtful, detailed letter about his concerns, which basically, I love the way you put it at the beginning of your letter, that you have a responsibility to yourself to spend your time productively. And you're very concerned that your involvement chairing the Alumni Association wasn't really meeting that standard for yourself. You know, I can imagine, Ben, because I've done development work, and you want to feel good about, because you're not asking for yourself, right? And that's, I used to train people, because it's hard to ask for money, you know? And so, you know, I would remind people who were doing fundraising, it's really about the cause. It's about everybody's interest in the mission, right, of the organization.
Right.
And so when you take that I'm asking for money thing, well, no, the organization is asking for support, and you're working for that goal, and you're calling people who also share those values and that mission, which changes the whole thing. But what you're describing, first of all, this very top-down approach without consulting the actual numbers people, just saying, you need to find the money. Like Sydney Gruters, go pull a rabbit out of your hat. You know, that's what she's being told to do. And the numbers guy, Larry Geimer, saying, nobody ever asked us, and we're 99% committed to the kinds of projects that alumni want to fund. I want to ask you, because there was a certain percentage of the endowment that was allowed to be spent, and it was like less than 2%, I think. And you expressed concern that more than that was being spent, that they were going outside the spending constraints. Am I reading that right? Or
yeah, more or less. We were talking about investment before. That's mm-hmm. basically how investment policy for an organization like the foundation works. The board sets what's called a spend rate, which is a limit you're putting on your annual expenditures out of the endowed funds, because as you were saying, your goal is to preserve and grow that principal and just spend from the returns on it. So mm-hmm. we had a spend rate of 3.5%, and it's 3.5% of a moving average of the total amount in the endowment. So it kind of stabilizing it year by year.
Returns go up and down, right?
exactly.
On the investment. Yeah.
Right. And with 3.5%, you should be able to keep, you know, the endowment itself. Inflation is like a moth in a closet eating your clothes, right? So you want to keep pace with inflation and hopefully grow the endowment somewhat. And 3.5% is sufficiently modest that you should be able to do that. And it was reduced to 3.5% in the first half of 2023 after an effort by some on the board, including an alumnus who were, interested in that issue of long-term endowment preservation and growth. Mm-hmm. And it was reduced from 5.5% to 3.5%. And what's really odd about New College, and this is an important point, is right now of the 3.5%, only 1.25% is direct spend on the things the donors truly cared about. And then the other 2.25% is classified as an administrative fee. And this is not really a setup that is going to be effective for attracting philanthropic gifts. And not just from alumni. I mean, the community giving has been really important for New College, and we're really grateful for all the people in Sarasota and Manatee counties who have, you know, taken an interest over the years.
Yeah. You say in your letter, those who had made substantial past gifts woke up to a new reality that only 1.25% of their donated funds per annum were used toward the purpose that actually motivated their gift. So of that 3.5% spend rate, 2.25% went to this foundation administrative fee. And it seems to me that disproportionate amount was going toward athletics and executive salaries. Is that accurate?
Gosh, it seems like there may be some arrangement to use the administrative fee for. I don't have the paperwork with me to say with confidence, but it's not going to the purpose, you know, the endowed professorship or other specified purpose that each fund is for. It's classified as an administrative fee. And in theory, it's being used for foundation administrative purposes like staff salaries and overhead. But the college sometimes funds those things. What happens to the administrative fee in that case? It's not. I don't have that paperwork in front of me, but
and here's the thing. It you bring up transparency issues too, right? That it's not easy for if you're going fundraising for the university, you need to feel confident about what's actually going on, and that you know what's actually going on, and it's a public university. None of this should be a mystery. But apparently it is. Is that fair?
Yeah. And to answer the original question you asked in this part of the discussion, it just doesn't seem, despite having very good investment performance for the last few years, I mean, it's generally similar to overall stock market performance based on our investment strategy. We just haven't seen that growth in the endowment that you would expect when your spend rate is limited to just 3.5%. And this would be brought up again and again, and the foundation would give these explanations that on the surface kind of sounded nice, but I never actually understood why the investment returns aren't being added onto the endowment.
Because the market's doing well, right? The investment environment has been good.
That's a key point. That's a key point because that's the reason we expected to see endowment growth. And we not only has the market been doing well, we know the foundation's specific investment strategy has been doing well. I'm not sure, you know, when the current fiscal year ends, if we can say the same, but that's, I'm not even blaming anyone for that. That's normal, right? I mean, that's normal.
Sure, that happens.
But last few years, it happens to have been doing quite well. Mm-hmm. So And it's just this endless back and forth, the question being asked repeatedly. And I mean, if you're on a board like that and you're not getting answers that make sense, and you get different answers and they have different permutations, but they never make sense, that's a real problem.
That is a problem. You write too, just so people really understand that an administrative fee, so you've got this 3.5% spend rate, and you make mention that it looks like it actually was more than that. I'm recalling the number 3.9, but you said a direct spend rate of 3.9% or higher. But you make the point that it is unusual for an administrative fee is common, but it is unusual for an administrative fee to be greater than the direct spending on programs. And here you've got significantly greater, you know, the proportion of the spending, 1.25% is going toward programs, 2.25 is going toward administration. And it's kind of interesting to me that you've got that underwater type scenario with a political philosophy that claims to be conservative. That's not conservative. That's actually bureaucratic bloat.
A 3.5% would be, which has been, I can confirm, since mid-2023, the foundation's official spend rate adopted by its board has been 3.5% total.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not supposed to spend from the endowment above that amount. And based on the moving average calculation that they use for that, 3.9% is a number from another university. So the research support I'm getting from the alumni community found out that of the universities for which they could find data, the public universities in Florida, the lowest direct spend rate anywhere else is 3.9%.
Okay.
So a donor to one of these other institutions, you know, and maybe that's a little high. I mean, in terms of how we assess it, but that's the lowest that was found. And so, but what's good about that is a donor to one of the other state university system institutions, you know, 3.9% of the money they donate every year is being used for the thing they actually cared about, whether it was a professorship or a program or whatever, or a facility or whatever it may have been.
Yeah.
You know, that was being, so they were seeing an impact from their gift on the thing they actually cared about.
Right.
And we're only getting 1.25%.
Yeah, that's pretty low. You know, Ben, I'll just speak for my own experience here. My dad taught at Fordham University. He was a physics professor and, you know, a Republican, a conservative, but he believed in tenure and he believed in the independence of teaching institutions. And I find it so curious because I'm the oldest of five in an Irish Catholic family. When Richard Corcoran talks about his background, that's a background I share, you know. And Fordham University was founded by Jesuits. A lot of this Hillsdale curriculum I see is very related to what the Jesuits taught in Catholic schools about Western civilization and philosophy and public speaking. But the Jesuits, this Pope was a Jesuit, and the Jesuits are like the ethical badasses of the Catholic Church. I mean, they are stalwarts for ethics. And I don't see that happening at New College. I don't see a foundation that's actually accountable to its donors. And if you're hiding the ball and donors don't feel confident that the money that they're giving is actually going to the programs that they want it to go to, that's an issue. So I'll give you the last word. We just have a minute left.
Cool. Thank you. My reflection on that is New College attracts, you know, free-thinking, often opinionated people, and that produces diversity. So we have a very intellectually diverse alumni community, and some of them were sincerely interested in the Western civilization curriculum and that sort of brand of education, but
Yep.
I threw in the towel because we ultimately lost even those folks in terms of
So Ben, I'm
yeah.
sorry. I
I
want to
know.
say thank you to you. It's so great to have you. Everybody, you've been listening to WSLR 96.5 LPFM in Sarasota, Florida, and WBPV 100.1 LPFM in 100.1 LPFM in Bradenton, Florida. Make it a great day.